Listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby, BC.
Quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. This is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's what we've got cooking up this hour. You're tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We're the campus community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on unceded stolen territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on the unceded stolen territories of the Katsi, Kwikwetlem, and Tsleil First Nations. And here at Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, and we thank them for their stewardship. My name is Leslie, and oh boy, we are at the end of August. You know, when I first was coming into this month, I was like, okay, obviously, as per typically Tuesday's tradition, I gotta do something like kind of queer, kind of gay for the first Monday of August, because that's the Monday right after Vancouver Pride. Even though I don't go to Pride, I like to commemorate, you know, a little bit of the history by doing something kind of queer on that first Monday of August. And what was supposed to be just one episode about Yuri manga recommendations, like underrated Yuri manga recommendations, it ended up becoming a three-part series. It was like more recommendations and review than just recommendations. And I thought I was going to be done, you know, because like I like to categorize Yuri manga in those ways. Like, who is this story about based on age? Because like readership age in manga is just really important. But then that left like this final week dangling. And I was like, I can't have that. It feels weird. So the Yuri manga recommendations and review series is over. For now, technically. I'm not going to be talking about Yuri manga again for a little bit while. I'm a little bit, you know, like, Yuri manga'd out. But today's episode is kind of a spin-off. As I had mentioned throughout this series, I think that categorizing boys' love and girls' love manga needs to be a little bit more nuanced, because in North America, booksellers just categorize it as queer literature, as queer comics, when it's a little bit more complicated than that. And queer comics, queer manga, I should say, is actually quite different from boys' love and girls' love. And I wanted to explore this concept by recommending a series today that I've actually recommended to a lot of people several times, and I think this is a series that a lot of people really like as well. But it deserves a little bit of a spotlight here on Typically Tuesday, specifically for this topic. And the story is called Our Dreams at Dusk by Yuki Kamatani. I'm really excited to be talking more about it. I've read the story several times, and there are a few things that I really dislike about the series, and then also some things that I quite like about it. And when you understand the way that the story plays out, the genre conventions that it's trying to not tackle, it becomes very clear that there is a really big difference between what is girls' love and boys' love manga, and also what can be considered queer. So stick around for that, because that's going to happen in the latter part of today's episode. Of course, the first part, we're going to be talking about the context of it all, where I'm coming from. And on today's playlist, pretty short one, because it's going to be a really packed episode, mostly just like new queer music. I hope you enjoy. Bina. Here's Pierre Quenders, the ambiance.
Tala tobina kike bonanzango e batata atobina zitu tala zitu tambula malembe zitu 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 tambula malembe zitu tambula zitu tambula malembe zitu tambula zitu zitu tambula malembe zitu tambula.
Mallards at your local pond. They're our largest dabbling duck, and among ducks, the most abundant species. They're the source of all domestic ducks, except the Muscovy. There's a female making herself heard. But does it seem that all the brightly colored male mallards have disappeared? By now, the male duck's need for fancy feathers to attract the females has passed. The male mallards have molted, dropping their bright green, reddish, black, and white feathers and replacing them with mottled brown ones. Changing into more subdued colors for the months of summer helps camouflage the male ducks, protecting them from predators. Come fall, the mallards will molt again and return to the colorful dandies we remember. In the meantime, while all the mallards look like brownish females, there's one way to distinguish males from females. Look closely at the bill. The male's bill is dull yellow, while the female's is orange marked with black. And watch to see which duck is quacking. That's the female mallard. Male mallards make a more subdued and raspy call, mostly when courting or greeting, or when they feel threatened. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays. And let's talk, right before we get into the discussion about our dreams at dusk, I want to talk a little bit about why I think our dreams at dusk is a pretty good recommendation for if you're interested in queer manga. I think that there is a big distinction between boys love and girls love manga and what we can consider to be queer manga. Listen, I'm not a media scholar. I'm not an academic. I'm not a media critic. I am just a person who happens to be queer and also a person who loves reading manga. And I have read manga for many, many, many years. I have also been queer for many, many, many years. And something that I have noticed is that in North America, there's this tendency for booksellers to categorize boys love and girls love manga as being queer or being LGBT plus. And to some extent, I really understand that, because when you read the stories, they're about relationships between men or relationships between women. But I think both of these genres, boys love and girls love, they have such interesting histories and nuances that it's really important to explore those things. There's like this complicatedness to boys love genre stories and girls love genre stories. And I don't think there's like a right way or a wrong way to go about this, because of the way that media and also because of the way that identity intersect. But I think it's crucial for us to hold space for these two things. So I'm just going to be sharing some of my observations. And again, not an academic, okay? Just a person who's watched not a small number of videos and podcasts and listened to not a small number of podcasts and read some things that make me think about this. This is a topic that I've been stewing on actually for several years. I think now is the time to unleash some of my thoughts to the world. The truth is that I don't think that BL and GL, like boys love and girls love, I don't think that they should be categorized as queer literature. I think that all the time, I guess. And I think also it's notable that they are not considered queer literature in Japan either. To understand the history of boys' love and girls' love, you'll need to listen to the first episode in this series that I did, where I talk about that a little bit briefly. And I will also share links to readings and videos and podcasts about this particular subject. But what you need to understand is that, like, boys love and girls love, these two genres, they didn't begin in queer culture or queer literature necessarily, or maybe I should say in with particular regards. Okay, I should say this: their histories are not always rooted in queer culture, is what I should say. You know, I mentioned in the first episode of this series that Yuri began in this kind of like genre of literature called Class S that kind of had these feminist questions, and some of the most prominent Class S writers were themselves lesbians who were exploring these questions around feminism and around intimate relationships between women. And BL, actually, as I understand it, it kind of begins differently. It begins actually with shipping and with really manga artists, oftentimes young women, who were really interested in drawing stories and writing stories about their favorite male characters falling in love with each other. And those stories began getting popular through self-publishing. In that same episode that I did earlier this month, talking about the history of Yuri and GL, I also talk about how boys love and girls love kind of begin to get popular in the mainstream through girls' manga, essentially, through shoujo manga. And so I think we can kind of start there if we begin our discussion about boys' love, which is that, yeah, these stories actually are not written for queer men. Boys' love has its histories in being written by women for women. And you can see that when you begin to compare boys' love stories with what is in Japan considered gay manga in the first place, boys' love stories oftentimes can be published in shoujo manga, in girls' manga magazines, whereas gay manga is published in magazines for gay men, like explicitly for gay men, that are rooted in gay culture, that are about the lives and experiences of gay men. And the, you know, that's a really big distinction. And beyond that, when you start to flip through these stories, you can see the really distinct differences. Boys' love has certain genre conventions and tropes that it will use, and they are oftentimes ones that come right out of girls' manga, whereas gay manga, not so much. And you can see it in the character designs and in the gaze of the story, the way that it's written, right? You know, in boys' love, these characters are very, very pretty. They look like a lot of the times, like beautiful young male pop stars or beautiful young male actors. And they're clean shaven, they're slender, even if they're really tall. Whereas gay manga, they depict men, like real life men, who have different body shapes, different body types. They might be bearded. They are not always sporting like this like cute little boy band mop top. They might be like, you know, wearing like a crew cut or like a Caesar or something like that. And so there's like that really big difference, right? Who are these men supposed to be attractive to in boys' love versus who are these men supposed to be attractive to in gay manga? Obviously, people have different tastes. Not all women are into dudes who look like Jungkook from BTS. Not all gay men are into bears, but there is that kind of really distinctive difference. I've been listening a lot to a podcast called Mangasplaining in preparation for this episode. And it's a podcast about manga for people who don't read a lot of manga. And whenever they talk about gay manga and also BL, this is a topic that is often discussed. One of the hosts is Deb Aoki, who is a cartoonist and comics critic. She's a straight woman who also happens to love BL. Another host is Christopher Woodrow Butcher, who is a comics editor, bookseller, and he is a gay man who's friends with a lot of gay mangaka in Japan. And so they talk about the distinctive differences between BL and gay manga, and it's often kind of notable that this host, who's a gay man, he's not all that into BL because he knows it's not written for him. And those story genres and conventions, you know, they're not always for this like adult grown man in his 40s. A lot of the times they are written for young women. So those things are kind of a little bit more nuanced in boys' love than it being straightforward, like queer literature. Because these stories are not steeped in the lives and experiences, community, or culture of queer men. Even though they are about men falling in love with each other and having special relationships with each other. And so I want to talk a little bit then on the other side of things, on girls' love as well, on GL. This thing that I've been talking about throughout this series, because I think this is really, really important. I've mentioned throughout the series that what I've observed is that Yuri kind of exists on the spectrum from being more grounded in the lives and experiences of queer women and the issues and joys that we experience. And then on the other side of the spectrum, being solely provocative and titillating. And so I've said on the series already, you know, most of all of what I have recommended, I think most if not all, falls in the middle of that. And I really want to emphasize that because a lot of what would be considered Yuri, a lot of what is considered girls' love, leans really heavily to the provocative and titillating. The fact of the matter is, lesbians are just fetishized. Queer women are fetishized. We are objectified. And unfortunately, that is just a huge part of the reason why a lot of girls' love is actually just straight up pornography, or sometimes porn with plot. This was actually my introduction to girls' love, really. When I first started reading Yuri, a lot of what was available, most of what was available that I could get my hands on was pornography. It was stuff that was like erotic and had not a lot to do with all of the colors of being a queer woman. I remember reading stories really about girls who were just doing depraved things in general and to each other, even if they were falling in love with their classmates, you know. I think it's also worth mentioning too that a lot of the Yuri sometimes that you could get your hands on that wasn't just, you know, straight up brutality and objectification. It was provocative in nature because the romances that were featured, even though sometimes they would be set maybe in this classic, like, class S trope in, like, an all-girls school or something like that, the story would focus on the forbidden nature of the romance between these girls. It was rarely ever about the actual issues or joys even that queer women or even women in general experience. It's in seriousness, I think it's only until like the past 10 or so years that I've started to see more Yuri that has more plot and is supposed to be less provocative and titillating. It is supposed to be more about the explorations of lives of girls and women. And I feel like there is a really big difference between of what I've seen personally. There can be a really big difference between girls' love and comics for lesbians, because even though on that there's that other side of girls' love that's like more grounded in the lives of queer women, I have also been really fortunate in my life to be able to see and read lesbian magazines from like the 1990s and the 2000s that have comics in them that are really just, you know, they're just about like lesbians living their lives, essentially. I've also been really fortunate to see sometimes similar comics that are just self-published, and they are very much just about queer women being queer women, whether or not there's like a romance in there. That's not always the main important thing. A lot of the times these stories are really just about queer women trying to share a part of their life with a readership. On that, actually, I think a little bit of a fun fact that maybe adds to what I'm trying to share here is that I got into boys' love before I began reading girls' love manga. And the reason why is it goes beyond just like shame and not being ready to accept the fact that I was not into men. But it was also because what was available for girls' love at that time, just too much of it was super male-gazy. And I just could not stand it. And I was also so severely uninterested in heterosexual romances at the time that as a young girl, if I wanted to turn to something that had romance in it, I turned to boys' love. Because, one, it didn't have any of the heterosexual nonsense that I was trying to avoid. And two, even though in boys' love manga, the women are treated really poorly, they're always demonized, they were never objectified. And it was easy for myself as a young girl to read these stories that are meant for girls, to project myself into one of the characters. On the Mangasplaining podcast, they actually talk about that, that aspect of boys' love, which is that female readers are often able to project themselves or parts of themselves onto the protagonists who are in love in a way that they might not be able to with other manga, and may not even be able to with certain heterosexual shoujo manga. But obviously, just because boys love and girls love isn't always for queer men and women, in my opinion, it doesn't mean that, you know, queer people don't enjoy these stories. I think because these stories can be so well written and illustrated, and also touch on universal topics about, like, pain, identity, love, yearning, it can have a potential universal appeal. And I actually think that if there are cisgender heterosexual people who are interested in reading stories that feature same-gender romance, that boys' love and girls' love is a really, really easy entry point. It's a really accessible way to get into that, because these stories are so far removed so much of the times from the actual lives and culture of queer people. But again, all of it is so nuanced, because I'm, you know, a certified lesbian, and I love reading these stories. And I know how, and I mean, I love gay manga, I love lesbian manga, I love stuff that, like, GL, that, like, sits largely on the edge of being, like, grounded in lesbian lives and queer women's lives. But I mean, I still enjoy stuff that's, like, in the middle as well. I've been kind of thinking about it like this. The concept of a gay identity is one that is pretty relatively new, right? Like, a lot of research, historical research has suggested this. But people just did gay things before then. I think that BL and GL is kind of like stories about doing the gay thing, but queer literature is like identifying as queer. I've talked so much at this point. I think it's really time to take a little bit of a break, so we'll just do that.
This is Bird Note. On a hot summer's day, you can watch a bird, like a crow, very, very carefully, and you'll never see it sweat, because birds don't have sweat glands. Instead, they've evolved a variety of other ways to keep cool. One of them is panting. As the bird breathes rapidly, its throat quivering, heat is carried out of the body via the lungs and air sacs. The lungs are a one-way system, so cool air coming in does not get mixed up with warm air coming out. Holding its bill open, the bird also oscillates a tiny bone in a part of its throat where there are a lot of blood vessels. The oscillations bring more blood to the area, allowing heat from the blood to dissipate. Bare skin on the legs, face, and beak also help the cooling. So do puffing out feathers, fluttering wings, or splashing in a puddle or bird bath. And soaring birds, like hawks, can simply ride the updrafts far above the ground to where the air is cooler. Closer to the ground, birds can also do what we do to avoid overheating. Keep busy during cooler hours, and take it easy in the shade as the day heats up. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.